Well, last week in Mark's Gospel, we were at a meal, at a lavish banquet held in a palace in honour of Herod the King. Tonight is another meal. It's a simple picnic held in the wilderness, but it's in the presence of the true King, Jesus Christ. I know which meal I'd rather be at. So please have the reading open in front of you. Mark chapter 6 and verse 30 to 44 should be in the little Gospels. I can't remember the page number, but I'm sure you can find it. And we come to perhaps the best known of Jesus' miracles. It's recorded in all four Gospels, and we know it as the feeding of the 5,000. So what we'll do is we'll simply go through the narrative, and then we'll draw two lessons. So let's look together at what Mark's Gospel says. Chapter 6, verse 30, the apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. If you remember, in chapter 6 and verse 7, Jesus sends out the 12. The 12 apostles, this unique group of men, who after 3 years of training will become Christ's representatives on earth. Clothed with Christ's authority, they'll go out and proclaim Christ's message. Well, as we find them in Mark chapter 6, they're simply men in training. They're not the finished article. In fact, up to Mark 6, following Jesus has for them meant listening and learning. In kingdom terms, they've been no more than extras. Well, they get their chance to play their first big role. He sends them out two by two, real work experience. And now in verse 30, they report back to Jesus all that they had done and taught. Verse 31, he said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while." Many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. So the last few weeks have been full on. There's barely been time even to eat, and everyone's exhausted. So says Jesus, come on, it's time for a short holiday. Time for rest. Come away by yourselves to a desolate place where no one will find us, and rest a while. So verse 32, they hop into the boat. And they set sail across the Sea of Galilee to a quiet spot where no one will find them. But of course, verse 33, that's not how it works out. Someone sees them leave, word gets round, people work out where they're headed, and as it were, hurrying round the coast, the crowd gets there first. So that when Jesus and his disciples arrive at their secret holiday hideaway, there's this great crowd waiting for them. Well, what would be your reaction? Can you see the look on the disciples' faces as the boat comes in to the shore? They're looking at each other thinking, oh no. Be my reaction. What's Jesus' reaction? Verse 34. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd and he had compassion on them. Because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. So can you see the scene? As Jesus' boat approaches the shore, there are literally thousands waiting to greet him. And from a distance, they're probably dressed in light-coloured clothes, maybe white colours, clothes. And against that background of the green grass, certainly from the boat, they look like sheep. And then, of course, as Jesus steps forward off the boat, the crowd rush forward. And the many sheep become a great flock surging towards Jesus. But, of course, they're sheep without a shepherd. And when Jesus sees them, he's moved with compassion. They're not spoiling his holiday. They're not problems to be solved. They're real people. People to be pastored. And so the shepherd begins to feed the many sheep with his word, verse 34. And he began to teach them many things. Well, Jesus teaches. The people listen. The sun tracks across the sky. It's now late afternoon. And you can see the disciples looking at each other thinking, well, this is supposed to be a holiday. So they pipe up. And they say to Jesus, it's time to get rid of them. Verse 35, and when it grew late, the disciples came to him and said, this is a desolate place, and the hour is now late. Send them away to go into the surrounding countryside and villages to buy themselves something to eat. Lord, this is supposed to be a holiday. So send them away. Says Jesus, no. Don't distance yourself from the need. This is as much your problem as mine. Verse 37. But he answered them, you give them something to eat. Now look at their reply. It's sarcastic, isn't it? And they said to him, shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat? Shall we take a year's wages, nip down to Tesco's, buy up everything in sight, and feed this lot? You can't be serious. Verse 38, and he said to them, how many loaves do you have? Go and see. When he asked that question, you can see the looks on their faces. They're not willing to help, not willing to do anything. So he's saying to him, go and see, go on, go and find out. And when they had found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. You get the feeling they weren't looking too hard. In a crowd of 5,000 people, or even just amongst yourselves, if you set off on holiday, you're bound to have more than 5 loaves and 2 fish, aren't you? The disciples said, they're tired men. They're suffering from compassion fatigue. And when he says to them, go on, go and have a look, they're just dragging their feet. They've had enough. You want to feed? You want to feed all these people? Oh, well, look what we've got, 5 loaves and 2 fish. Go on. You know what I mean, don't you? Someone asks you to help. You're tired. You're weary. You don't want to help them. But you don't want to be seen to be unwilling. So you say yes when you really mean no. And your contribution amounts to no more than 5 loaves and 2 fish. We've all done it, haven't we? You know, here's a packed lunch. You can't do anything with that, can you? Or can you? Verse 39, he commanded them to sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups by hundreds and by fifties. Now the language is interesting. Remember, this is Mark's gospel. It's Peter's eyewitness account. He was there. So Peter, what colour was the grass? It was green. That's not strange for the UK, but remember, this is the Middle East. But it's more than just an observation, isn't it? Mark is making a point. The crowd looked like sheep. They're sheep without a shepherd. Well, here is the shepherd. And what is the shepherd doing? He's making his sheep to lie down in green pastures. And then verse 39, Jesus commands them to sit down in groups. And the Greek word for group is for a group of people who eat and drink. Sort of convivial company, when you get together to enjoy food and drink. So it's saying the company here is easy. Folk are relaxed. They're enjoying being together. And verse 40 says again, they sat down in groups, but it's a different Greek word. It means they sat down in rows. So he gets them to sit down in rows of 50, rows of 100. So you don't have to sort of step over legs and try and get through a Greek group of people. It's going to be easy to distribute the food. And verses 39-40, we read, they sit down. Again, the word, the original word, is an interesting word. It's the word for sitting at a banquet. Special occasion. You sit down at a wedding. That sort of sense to it. It's interesting, isn't it? More going on here than meets the eye. So when you put it all together, what have you got? Well, it's well organized, but relaxed. It's a simple picnic, but it feels like a banquet. It's in the wilderness, but it's festive. It's almost like a wedding reception. And there are 5,000 guests. Although they're mostly strangers to each other, the company is warm and friendly. And it's all because the shepherd makes his sheep to lie down in green pastures. That's what Jesus does. Why ever would you walk away from such a meal? Verse 41, and taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples to set before the people, and he divided the 2 fish among them all. 4 verbs in there. Jesus looks up to heaven. He gives thanks. He pronounces the blessing. He breaks the bread. He then distributes that bread. It's what the head of a family would do at a mealtime. So as the sheep sit, the shepherd provides. But he provides through the hands of his disciples. And what happens? Well, as they move down these rows of 50 and 100, as they hand out the fish, as they hand out the bread, they discover there's more than enough for everyone. The 5 loaves, the 2 fish, never run out. They just seem to multiply in their hands. So no one goes hungry, and everyone is full. Verse 42, and they all ate and were satisfied. When you dine with the shepherd, there's always more than your heart could wish. When he lays the table, such is the generosity, there is always leftovers. In fact, verse 43, there are 12 baskets of leftovers. And they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of the fish. 12 baskets, maybe there's one for each disciple. Feed this lot can't be done. But as they puffed and sweated, carrying that basket, collecting up the pieces, maybe the disciples took the message to heart. So it's this fabulous banquet in the middle of nowhere. And oh yes, almost, this is Mark's punchline. How many were there? Verse 44, and those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. Wow. So time for some lessons. Just 2 lessons. The first lesson is this. Jesus' heart. Now, when does all this happen? Verse 31, he said to them, come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. So all this comes at the end of a punishing schedule. It happens at the start of their holiday. And to cap it all, it takes place when Jesus himself is grieving. The episode before is the death of John the Baptist. And Matthew, in his gospel, links John's death with Jesus' desire to get away from it all. So just for a moment, think. Jesus is exhausted. They've barely had time to eat. I mean, sometimes we have busy days, don't we? And we sort of manage to grab a sandwich somewhere. And maybe we've had a busy few days. But this has been many days. This has been weeks. Barely time to eat. So he's exhausted. But not just that. He's grieving. His cousin, John, and maybe they were childhood friends. Maybe they played together. Maybe John had always been there. His cousin John is dead. And of course, as we saw last time, it's the way John dies, isn't it? You know, it'd be fine if it was in the midst of some great heroic deed and John standing up for truth. But it's the way he's butchered at a whim. He's murdered. He's beheaded at the behest of a dancing girl. It all seems so ugly, doesn't it? So senseless, so pointless. Here is this great man of God, John. And that's how he dies. It just seems so meaningless. His head presented on a platter. And of course, John's death brings Jesus' death a step nearer. John is the forerunner. And so with the death of the forerunner, Jesus' own brutal death takes a significant step nearer. Now think about Jesus. All those things are going on in his mind. These are terrible days. If ever a man needed space, time, rest, it was Jesus. And he needs it now. But he's not going to get it. Verse 83, and many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns. Word goes round. The call goes out almost. And they're there from everywhere, and they got there ahead of them. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd. And there's a part of you, when he looks at that, you feel, they won't leave him alone. It's in Proverbs, isn't it? The leech has two daughters. Give, give. Everyone saying, give, give. Sucking him dry. When life was difficult enough already, it just got harder. And when he needs others, others need him. And not just all of that, but those who are closest to him, those who are supposed to be with him, they won't lift a finger to help. Verse 35, it grew late, disciples come to him, desolate place, hour is late, send them away. Send them away. We're supposed to be on holiday. And when he answers, you give them something to eat. He comes back with this sarcastic reply. Oh, year's wages. How are we going to feed this lot? They make it very clear this is your problem, not ours. Jesus is alone. He's walking a sorrowful, exhausting path. And he's walking it alone. And yet for all that, what do we see? We see the great heart of the shepherd. Look at verse 34. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd. And you can see the looks on the disciples' faces. But what's his reaction? And he had compassion on them. Because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. Jesus' heart. Christian friend, what of you? Are you exhausted? You know, that tiredness that a good night's sleep doesn't cure. Are you exhausted? And have you just received some bad news? Are you grieving? Maybe you feel you can't take any more. That if life was hard before, it's just got harder. And maybe you feel you're being crowded and pressed by a thousand needs and they won't leave you alone. And perhaps the worst thing is that you feel you're carrying all this alone. You feel isolated. You're walking this path. It's a sad path. It's a difficult path. It's an exhausting path. But you're walking it alone. And maybe you're looking to people, but they're not looking to you. They're not responding to this. And you feel there's no one to help you. But then you see we come to God's word. And we read of Jesus, The one who is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And you read that and you say, all is not lost. Because Jesus approaches. And who is he? The one whose heart was pierced. The one who once was sad, alone, exhausted, grieving. The one who once was a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And he wears a brother's heart. And he has not changed. And he cannot but sympathize with us in all our sorrows and trials and weakness. All is not lost. And you see, he's the shepherd. Shepherds go before the sheep. Shepherds come and stand beside the sheep. But sometimes shepherds do more than that, don't they? He won't just walk beside you. He won't just go ahead of you. He knows his sheep. And it's when we can't go on, it's then that the shepherd carries us. And he gathers us up. And he carries us in his bosom, next to his heart. And it's there that he hides us from the storm. And you see, as you tell him all your heart, so he will open to you his heart, that mighty heart, that heart filled with tenderness and love, the Good Shepherd. And you will find grace to help in time of need. A day when he was weary and worn and sad, it's interesting, isn't it? Jesus performed one of his greatest miracles when he must have been at his lowest ebb, certainly up to that point. One of his greatest miracles. It was when he was in that place of great weakness that heaven came to his need. Verse 41, and taking the 5 loaves and 2 fish, he looked up to heaven. More than just simply the thing you do. In weakness, he looks to heaven. So Christian friend, he knows. He's been there before you. So is he going to desert you in all your need? It's unthinkable, isn't it? Now who knows how this may yet turn out? Who knows what purposes God has yet in these things? But even if today there is no miracle, only when we walk the lonely path of sorrow and trial do we begin to read the loving heart of Jesus. And so to our second lesson. It's Jesus' power. How can he, through the hands of his disciples, feed 5,000 men? And you know what men are like? Men, when they've got food in front of them, they're off, aren't they? Don't come between a man and his food. They're not having little cucumber sandwiches. They're stuffing their faces. How can he feed 5,000 hungry men? Think of it. With 5 loaves and 2 fishes, I could put 5 loaves and 2 fishes on, I don't know, I could almost put them on my Bible, couldn't I? I mean, how is it done? So much so that everyone is full and they manage to collect up 12 baskets of the leftovers. I mean, who is this? And that's the question that Mark is getting you to think about, isn't it? Who is this? That's the question he wants you to answer. I mean, who is this who stills the storm with a word? Who confronts and conquers a whole legion of demons? Who even raises the dead? And who satisfies a hungry crowd with a packed lunch. Who is this? And the answer is, he's the one through whom all things were made. He is the real behind all reality. He is the life behind all life. He is the meaning behind the universe. He is the God who is there. The God who has entered his world and walked our streets. The God who became man, who became a man. And Jesus is his name. Who else would be doing these things? Well, maybe you're thinking, well, I don't believe in miracles. Miracles don't happen. Science disproves such things. Well, I can't perform miracles, and you can't perform miracles, and none of us here can perform miracles. But then we're not God, are we? How does the Bible begin? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So the God of order created an ordered universe. The lawgiver made a universe governed by laws. Laws which science can measure and understand. Laws which are intelligible and predictable. But of course, it's not science that's sovereign. God is. And if today God wants to change the way he works to feed 5,000 people, if he wants to change the way he usually does things to make a point, no surprises that science can't keep up. The science relying as it does on God doing things in his usual way can't cope. God is free, isn't he, to change the way he usually does things. His laws aren't sovereign. That's just the way he does things normally. He's sovereign. And if he wants to change the way he does things, so be it. And anyway, what sort of God were you expecting? Don't you want a God who really is God? A God who is all powerful? There's nothing he cannot do? And don't you want a God of compassion? Who changes the way he usually works to feed a great crowd of hungry men? Don't you want a God with a human face who speaks and relates and teaches and understands and feels with us? A God who loves? And there's a sense, is that, don't you want a God who's not bothered actually whether or not you believe in miracles? Don't you want a God who's not bothered whether or not you believe in him? You know, a God who doesn't come sort of tapping on our window at night saying, please, please believe in me. I know it's hard to believe in me, but I'll give you some more evidence for my existence. That's the sort of God you want. God who says, just let me into a corner of your intellectual world so I can just sit there just for a few days. A God who panders to us. Don't you want a God who really is God? God who's in charge. The inexhaustible fire that burns behind all reality. He really is God. And here, you've got to love this. He feeds 5,000, doesn't he, with such grace and joy and style and finesse. Isn't it wonderful? Just the way it's done. Only God could do it like that. There you are, you're standing there, you've got to feed 5,000 people. How would Amy and Park do it? It'd be chaos, wouldn't there? All sorts of. But it's just done with such finesse. Such aplomb, isn't it? Such style. You can look at that and say, that's fantastically done. A friend of ours is very generous. She always had folk back to her house on Sunday for lunch. But no matter how many people she had back to her house, she only ever served up half a chicken. So it's fine if there were four of you. But if there were 14 of you, I mean, half a chicken only go, the other half a chicken, of course, be kept for Monday, but half a chicken only goes so far, doesn't it? So the solution one of our friends used to eat before he went round for his lunch. But what do we read here? And they all ate and were satisfied, and they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of the fish. It's done with such style, isn't it? Because when God serves a dinner, there's plenty for all. That's the God that he is. I want to push it a little bit further because I think this is the main point of the passage. My friend, don't you want a God who has compassion on lost sheep? Sheep without a shepherd. Verse 34 again, when he went ashore, he saw a great crowd and had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. They're lost sheep. He has compassion on sheep without a shepherd. What is it to be a lost sheep? We can be so lost we don't even know we are lost. But it soon becomes evident that we are lost. You know, we all have our ways of living, don't we? We all have our priorities. We have our likes and our dislikes. There's a sort of life that we choose. That's the life I'm going to live. But as soon as that life is stress tested by failure and disappointment and loss and tragedy and illness and death, as soon as that life that we've chosen is tested, we soon discover that we're lost, that we're sheep without a shepherd. What is it to be a lost sheep? It's to be afraid, isn't it? Sheep aren't very fierce. It's to be afraid. Afraid of what others think. Afraid of what might happen. Afraid of troubles and illness. Afraid of death. And we feel so small and everything seems so big and there is no shepherd to protect us. What is it to be a lost sheep? It's to be hungry. It's to be unsatisfied. An elderly Russian widow took a job cleaning stairwells in her Soviet apartment block. Why? Well, to earn a little bit extra, yes, but why? Why take a job like that? She did it to support missionaries working in Mongolia. Why, when you're a poor widow, would you earn a little bit more doing a horrible job and earn a little bit more only then to give it away? Why would you do that? She did it for the joy, the pleasure, the satisfaction of serving her Lord. She had been a lost sheep, but a lost sheep had been found by the shepherd, and her heart was filled to overflowing. And they all ate and were satisfied. When I think of Regendrum, by the values that hold sway in the West, Regendrum had nothing. But then to meet him and to see his smile was to see that he had everything. Lasting satisfaction. Because he had Christ. He had the shepherd. Joy in him. So, my friend, as we close, are you a sheep without a shepherd? You're lost. You don't know why you're here. I don't mean why you're here this evening. I mean the big sense. Don't know where you are. Don't know where you're going. Maybe you're afraid. Maybe for you it's just one anxious care after another. You wake up in the morning, oh, yeah. And your life is a series, a succession of worries and fears. And maybe worst of all, that gnawing fear, that fear in the back of your mind, that fear of some, you can't quite put your finger on it, but the fear of disaster. And that fear is feeding off the fact that you're not right with God. And that fear is feeding off the fact that you're not ready to die, and therefore you're not ready for the judgment. And you know that. You know there's no way that you can prove your innocence. And that sort of non-distinct, you can't quite put your finger on what it is, but that's what it's feeding off. That you're not right with God. A fear of disaster. And you're hungry, empty, unsatisfied. That you can laugh and yet be utterly inside joyless. A lost sheep. If this reading tells you anything, it's that Jesus is the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd who has compassion on lost sheep, and who leads all who follow him to the greenest of pastures. Just take a look at that closing scene. A simple picnic in the wilderness, but it ends up feeling like a banquet. For God himself lays the table. It's like a foretaste of heaven. My friend, are you a lost sheep? Wandering, afraid, hungry? Well, tonight in the gospel, as the word has been preached to you, Jesus is here. Now don't start trying to work out where Jesus is going to fit into your life. That's not the gospel. What do you do with a shepherd? You don't work out where the shepherd fits into the life of the sheep. The sheep follows the shepherd. So don't start thinking, I don't know how it's all going to fit in. Simply follow him. The shepherd who laid down his life for the sheep. The shepherd who became a lamb to take away the sin of the world. The Jesus who died the punishing death that we deserve to die. So that I can be forgiven and enjoy peace with God. That I can know life everlasting, life that begins now with still waters and green pastures and rest for your soul. Tonight the word is calling to you. Can you hear his voice? Can you hear Christ calling to you through his word? If you can, call back. Call on the name of the Lord. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved.